Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Private Prissy Pants?
Sir, yes, sir. Lieutenant Hefty?
What are you doing on your iPod on guard duty?
I'm listening to the default setting, sir.
Default setting?
Sir, yes, sir. It's a podcast where Jess and Gigi discuss people's default setting and how it's affected them, sir.
Sounds like hippie liberal psychobabble to me, Private.
It's actually really good.
What are you doing on base?
I'm your 5 o'clock humiliation appointment.
I hired you for discretion.
Catch the default setting on the Above Below Entertainment Network.
This episode of Let the Hate Flow Through You is brought to you by Jess Falstick.
Hey, isn't that Jess Falstick?
Nah, that's Sailor Moon. That's Jess Falstick.
Nah, that's just a couch covered in cats.
Oh, well, where's Jess Falstick?
Guys, I'm literally right here.
No, Jess Falstick has blue hair.
No, Jess Falstick's hair looked like she'd be part of the alt-left, if that were a thing.
Didn't she shave her head?
Just come see me every Sunday night at Avenue Tap House at 7 p.m. for the Red Light Comedy Showcase. The first Sunday of the month is open mic, and the last 3 Sundays showcase Cleveland's best and brightest comedic talent.
You know who's the funniest female comic in Cleveland?
Who's that?
Mary Santora.
God damn it.
That's Jess Falstick.
This is Nick Urich, and you're listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Jordano Diablo.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Jordano Diablo.
And this week, we're taking on something a little serious, so get your thinking caps on, and we will get to you momentarily.
You sound like a fucking school teacher. Get your thinking caps on.
Yeah, I'm, it's because we might be schooling people today.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, see, I'm not always teachery. Sometimes I do things right. Joining us this week is student activist and writer Vinny Karup.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on, man. So, Vinny, let's get right into it. Why do you hate rape culture?
I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I'd be hard-pressed to ask you back, you know, what do you not hate about it? I mean, the truth about rape culture is that you have people who are acting ignorantly and thoughtlessly because that's what they've kind of been taught by what they see older students doing, and you have other people that are getting hurt. And these aren't just people on other campuses and other places, but they're people that go to all of our schools, that are our friends and our neighbors. And it's not there's no real benefit to it, let me put it that way.
Well, the benefit that I would argue, and only for the sake of argument, is that in dealing with this, you're steeling yourself against, you know, when it becomes a bigger problem once you get out off campus and onward in life. So basically, you deal with it on a small level on a campus, but when you get out past that, you've already dealt with it on a small level, and now you're dealing with a whole shit ton more of it.
But why are you dealing with a whole shit ton more of it, right? And that's because people, when they're in high school, middle schools even, and in colleges, they're taught a certain way to act. Right. And then they take that into the actual world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you don't have the problem to start, then you don't have to really deal with it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, if you don't have the problem to start, but the problem is that I see is once you get out into the bigger off-campus, how do you continue the fight at that point? Because now you're dealing
with... Once you have the job at the bank.
Now you're dealing with people that have had this ingrained in their head from, like, long time ago. What's the... How do you change what they're doing socially in order to keep it going and not just... Not just have a new group of people that are being indoctrinated this way.
Sure. Well, there's a couple things, right? So first, you want to start with people that really care about the issue, right? You're never going to take somebody who thinks that rape culture is not a problem and that everything that they're doing is correct. You're never going to change them at the start.
Right.
You're going to build to that, right? So your first step is to grow with people who recognize that it's a big issue and want to learn more about it, right? Want to learn how they can call out other people on it, how they can be empowered to be active allies, and you know, to help other people and help combat gender and sexuality inequalities, right? And then you grow that to people who are kind of skeptical, but they recognize that there might be some problems, and then you grow that to then people who think that it's not an issue at all. That's one part of it, and the other part of it is, you know, I'll fundamentally always believe that there are bad people in the world.
Okay.
But when the widespread reach of these issues, of these inequities and these actions, those people can't be bad, right? For example, there's a statistic 1 in 5 women will be sexually the victim of either an attempted or completed sexual assault by the time they graduate undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's by RAIN. And that's a huge statistic. I mean, if you told me 1 in 5 gallons of milk was some weird white fluid, I would never drink milk for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know what I mean? And 1 in 5 is so large, we rarely think about it in terms of how actually widespread and how big it is. And all those people aren't fundamentally bad people. A lot of mm-hmm. them are in a system that teaches them how to do things, or they observe actions that they deem to be acceptable because that's what they learn. I mean, you're 14 years old, you see somebody going up and grinding on somebody without asking at a school dance. That's what you're taught, because that kid might be the senior that's cool. He might be the class not class president isn't cool because
not anymore.
Not I don't think it ever was really. He might be like the captain of the football team. We'll go with the major stereotype.
Okay.
And, you know, you watch that happen, and then these people are thought to think, okay, that must be what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's always going to be bad people, right? Asking how can you, like, stop all the bad people in the world? Well, I'm not Superman.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if Superman could. He can fly around fast and zip lasers out of his eyes, but, you know, if you've seen Batman versus Superman, he couldn't save that.
Yeah, he couldn't save that. However, I'm sure if Superman put his mind to it, probably involving his freeze breath, he could stop all crime in the world.
Just freeze. For some reason, I was about to jump in. And I thought you were going to say he could stop Batman. I'm like, Batman outthinks him every time. Like, can we not talk about this? Because you're wrong.
No, Superman. If Superman wanted to kill Batman, he probably could.
There's a movie on that. There literally was a movie made about that.
Yeah, but it was done. Awful. It was terrible.
It was done wrong. Horrendously bad.
And who wins?
Nobody wins.
Batman wins.
You know.
No, let's be honest. Martha wins.
Yeah.
That's who it is.
Which one? Wins.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly.
Not the one who died at the beginning of the movie.
No, there you go.
Superman, I guess, wins since his mom is still technically alive.
Ugh. that brought back a lot of bad memories.
Are you talking about flashbacks from that movie?
No, not flashbacks from the movie. Just everything that was going on.
I mean, it's 3 hours
around.
Long. It's probably, you know, it feels like an eternity, honestly.
Yeah, I know. I napped a couple of times.
I actually like the...
I went through puberty during it, honestly.
I like the well, that's, I've never seen that before. I actually like the extended version more. No, shut the fuck up. I actually like the extended version more because it actually adds like story to the movie, whereas like when I saw the theatrical version, it literally just felt like scenes chopped fucking together. And
well, you know, they tried to make the DC superhero movies like music videos for some reason.
A three-hour-long music video.
There you go.
Getting back to
the serious issue that we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, our goal is to it is twofold, right? It's to empower people to speak, because there's a lot of people that have had not only personal experiences but have voices, have knowledge, and have the interest to share their thoughts and their ideas and their expressions on these issues, because they've dealt with it either firsthand or you know, through one degree of separation. I mean, these issues are everywhere, and there's also another whole category of people who are incredibly just ignorant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'll be the first to say that was me going into high school. You know, going into high school, it was like this idyllic place, and I was like, you know, these problems don't exist. And the fact that there's that stark like difference. And the way that students are taught is mostly, well, not only it varies entirely by where you go to school, but also you paused.
Yeah, I paused there because I think, you know, you have how can I put this? People's pyramids and needs are different at different schools. So I think, you know, it's less of a problem in some areas because it's being dealt with by student bodies and, you know, by people that are interested in the issue. But in other places, it's just like, we're trying to figure out where to eat, so we don't really care.
No, and definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I 100% understand that. I mean, there's definitely certain demographics, certain places where these issues are more talked about. And mm-hmm. they're on the forefront of discussion. You have a lot more people that are involved in that. And I mean, it's sometimes like crazy to see the difference because like boarding school I go to, you know, these issues are talked about. And if somebody calls somebody else, you know, gay, like it's an insult, people are going to take offense to that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of campuses when, I mean, I'm talking about friends that I have at home who use it almost without even thinking about it. You know what I mean? They, you know, you're doing something like, oh, that's gay. And you're like, mm-hmm.
I still use the word retarded like that, and I know I shouldn't. Like, I don't, but retarded, I still do, and people yell at me all the fucking time. They're like, you can't say that anymore. I'm like, why not? But
because it's...
Because it's retarded?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he didn't say it out loud.
Yeah, no, there's...
I mean, I'm just saying, like, I can recognize things in myself, though, that I, you know, need to change. Unfortunately...
You just don't give a shit about changing them.
No, I've changed quite a bit, thank you very fucking much.
It's
terrifying to see what you were before that.
Oh, no, it was, we both halved. Halved.
Halved?
Yeah, that's... I've halved a verb. No, it's, It takes a lot of effort in order to change really ingrained behaviors like that, especially because, you know, for a long period of time, it was like fag was just the acceptable insult. It was just the new, you know, it was just like breathing at one point. And now things have calmed down a little bit, which is nice. But it's difficult to, you know, get out of that behavior when you've been saying it for so long. But no, it can be done.
No, definitely. And I mean, that's something that's important to recognize is, you know, these changes are incredibly difficult. I mean, personally, you know, becoming aware of this issue kind of between my sophomore and my junior year, really kind of understanding a lot more about it just by listening to my friends and hearing, you know, things. It's still difficult sometimes for me to be cognizant about what I say, about, you know, the actions I take, in the sense that, you know, I'm very used to just, I don't personally use gay as an insult, but I mean, I know people on campus who do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, early on that was like, even coming in as a freshman, that was like, oh, like that's what people do, right? That's what people do behind closed doors, not in public, but behind closed doors. And, you know, it's...
don't you point at me.
No, because we, Bashir and I mean, we're both, like, super fucking liberal, super fucking open people, but we say shit to each other behind closed doors that we should not say.
No, but it's different because, you know...
Because we have a podcast.
Yeah,
because
you have a podcast. That's what it is. You have two, actually.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Some behind closed doors stuff. With comedians gets a little out of hand because, you know, we know our audience. It's another comedian. They're just sick fucks like us. So it's like you can play more with language in that sense. But we know we're good boys. We don't go out in public like, you know, marching on people's goodwill by saying nasty things.
That's a start.
Yeah.
That's hands down. That's a start.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much where it's going to get with me personally. Because, you know, I just have to interact with so many different people. I can't go, I don't want to deal with you because you say that behind closed doors. But I definitely don't want to deal with you if you're like that in public.
No, yeah.
Because there have been a couple of things lately where somebody in Indiana, of all places, said some... pretty racist things. Who is the manager of a comedy club, and one of their regular features was like, yeah, I don't know if I want to do business with you anymore because you're talking about blacks and your own employee like that. So that's where we're at. It's like, if we find out things like that happen, it's like, yeah, we're not going to do business with you. But, you know, you can't necessarily write somebody off because, you know, they occasionally drop an F-bomb.
No. I mean, and it is
which F-bomb?
Well, we're...
Yeah, that's really important. Yeah.
Fudge.
Fudge. Oh, that was good.
Yeah, we synced it?
I think we just became best friends.
Harmonized it? I thought we already were best friends.
Oh, shit. Oh, sure, you didn't tell? No, when I walked out of the room for a minute to go get coffee, and I heard Shear go, yeah, if you're gonna be like that behind closed doors, I'm fine with that, but out in public, and my mind just went to, like, you talking to a gay person like that. Behind closed doors, if you want to be gay, it's fine, but if it's out in public, I can't talk to you.
No, it's, honestly, I think where a lot of people's problem with is they just don't know enough gay people. Once you start meeting a bunch of gay people, it's like, oh, yeah, don't talk like that, you idiot.
You mean to people that say homophobic things. You don't mean talking to the gay people, right?
No, I mean people that say homophobic things.
Okay, good. Okay, cool.
No, it's...
Because you said he was like when you... It could have been misconstrued. I just want the audience, all two people listening right now, to just know that, you know, you're not a homophobic human being. That you mean that when people say homophobic things, they shouldn't, because there's a lot of people that are affected by it.
No, I'm a scared of the gays. I have a tasty asshole.
No! Stay away! Scared!
When people say homophobic shit, or racist shit for that matter, like, I'm definitely a part of that. If you see something, say something. Like, I firmly believe that. Like, if you're saying racist shit, I worked before. The job, not the job I work now. It's a much more. What's the word I'm looking for?
Professional.
Professional and diverse.
Diverse is a good word.
Diverse,
okay.
Crowd. My old job, though, was like...
So wait, did you have the patch of pubic hair on your chin at that point, too?
Oh, I still do.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's his look. He did that on purpose.
You know,
can you believe it?
The thing is when most people talk bad about
it's difficult.
They die that day, and not by my hands.
Is it just be careful.
That's all I'm saying, because I do like you. We're best friends.
I know.
But no, at the old place I worked at, there was like 8 of us. And 7 people were white, 1 guy was black. And like... The one guy would constantly say racist shit. Like, not towards the black dude, but like... And the shit that he would say didn't even bother the black dude. But it's just not the point. I was like, he would say colored people. And he's fucking our age. He's 30 years old. It's like, you cannot say... Like, you haven't been able to say that for like fucking 30 years, dude. And
somebody had to tell me.
What?
Somebody had to tell me. This was many years ago. When I was
first...
You
don't call them collard grains.
No, it was...
collard people, that's...
No, I had a joke about... basically, it was a dumb NAACP joke. And, you know, I said colored people in the joke. And a guy came up and was like, you can't say that. And I was like... Why not? I thought that was what, you know, we were supposed to call you now. He's like, no.
You.
Wow. Wow. Jeez.
Yeah, he was an African-American gentleman. We're still good friends to this day. But he had to tell me, because I had, even raised Unitarian, I had no idea that you weren't allowed to say colored people. It was just something I had to learn.
No, and I mean, I think it's important to kind of come back to what you're saying about how, especially now with the advent of social media and an increase of communications, like you can reach a lot more people and right. You are talking about it. What the comedy club owner that was racist and kind of his client did is possible now. It's happening now. We're holding people accountable.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredible. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, movement's focus is by students, really, with the focus on being for students. Really, I mean, anyone can really engage with our content, but it does target kind of a high school, college demographic.
Okay.
Kind of like what I was talking about, an effort to hopefully change the conversations going forward.
Right.
And the generations up and coming. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. I mean, my dad always says, I cannot believe I just cited my dad in this. He says, you know, habits, when you get rid of the H, you still have a bit. And then when you get rid of the A, you still have bit. And he's like, it's hard to get rid of habits, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's understanding that, but then...
It's hard, but it's not impossible.
No, and it's necessary.
It's,
I mean, just
100%
because something,
necessary.
I mean, just because something hard doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. That's what she said. Anyway, back to it. Or he said, totally fine either way.
Michael Scott moment.
Totally fine either way.
That's what she said. Or...
What he said.
He said.
I mean, either... Or you know, and I think, you know, it's important that... We recognize that it mm-hmm. is difficult and that it is tough, but that, you know, it is necessary. And the hope is, like, nipping in the bud that, like, you know, you don't mm-hmm. have, as when people, especially in high school, colleges, as kids are starting to get away from the home more, figuring out more who they are, it's important that they understand that their actions and their words can really affect somebody. And that you might see people on campuses, and you know, these are your friends that you're talking about, people that you walk, that you see in the hallways, that you walk around and you see, and they can be smiling, but that doesn't mean they haven't been affected. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not they're just closeted and they haven't felt comfortable enough to come out yet, or whether they've been harassed or assaulted. I mean, that's not okay, and it is up to us to hopefully spearhead the discussion about changing that, because the way a lot of people are taught is fact based. Like, this is the law. This is the law. This is the law. And I think
the Bible and other religious books also say this is the law, and that fucking I don't believe in. So
there's even mental health professionals that take a hardline stance of, you know, if you didn't call the police, then it wasn't a crime.
Yeah.
Mental health professionals who say that?
Oh yeah.
That's fine. They shouldn't be mental health professionals.
Yeah, exactly.
Then.
Oh yeah. No.
Oh, wait, I know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no shit. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That happened to you.
Yeah.
That's fucking bullshit. Yeah. That's a great therapist. You should keep seeing that therapist.
No, I stopped seeing her. She no longer practices.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Genius.
But no, like you were saying, like, kids are coming up in more of a culture where, like, they're having to be, like, they're being more directed in that way of, like, you know, you don't say shit like this to, and I mean, obviously there's both sides of the spectrum, but I do think that, like,
what do you mean?
It's like, for example, obviously I have siblings that are twins that are 14 years old, raised by the same parents as me. Growing up, my parents are old school. They say shit they shouldn't say. But, like, as my siblings were growing up and I became more aware of stuff, I, like, when my little brother would say faggot, and I'd be like, don't say that. That's not okay. Like, you're going to say that around the wrong person, and you're going to hurt somebody's feelings, and you're not the type of person that likes to do that. And as they've grown up, and my other sister as well, she's 6 years younger than me, she almost got into a fight in the bar the other night because some dude kept calling another guy a faggot, kept saying it over and over again.
So Riley jumped in?
Riley jumped in and was like, hey, fucking don't say that. Like, that's not okay. And, like, I noticed, like, because I'm 30, and I'm starting to notice the younger generations are leaning more towards, like, they don't say shit that's gonna, like, I hate saying offend people. Like, I
no, it's
I
just more mindful speech.
Mindful speech.
Well, and I think the thing is, you know, people have this idea that, you know, kind of going off what you were saying, it shouldn't be about don't say it because you might offend somebody, but it should be don't say it because it's wrong. You know what
sure,
I mean?
Right.
Like because the idea that, you know, that means, like, it's okay to say if you're talking to somebody who else is saying it. You know what I mean? It audience definitely matters when you're speaking. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it doesn't. Being comedians, you guys definitely know that. You know,
yeah.
You have to be talking to your audience. But at the same time, some things are just intrinsically wrong for people to say. And I think it's important to spread that conversation. And you know, kind of talked about people that are already in the world, in the workforce, or older that mm-hmm. have these deeply entrenched views. You know, like you said, it's difficult, and anybody can change.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, it's much more unlikely that somebody who's had, you know, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years of these deep-rooted views is going to be able to understand and change. I'm not saying it's impossible.
No, right. I heard a statistic like a couple weeks ago that, you know, I read it on the internet, so who the fuck knows if it's real. But I said once a person hits...
You heard it on the internet.
I heard it
on
the internet.
That's how that works, right?
Well, you can watch YouTube videos and you hear them, so go fuck yourself.
And then you didn't read it, so...
But no, anyway, it was once you hit 47 years old, you can't learn new behavior. I don't necessarily think that's true, but, like, I could also see there being some validity to that. People are less apt to change once they hit a certain age.
I don't think it's a hitting, like, you hit a point. Like, it's not like,
right, it's not,
oh, you hit 48 and I'm sorry. You know what? Like, I'm deep. Like,
yeah,
I'm,
I still hate black people.
Yeah,
like sorry,
I can't.
And I'm
you know, if it was yesterday and I was 47, you know what? Maybe I would be down to change. But 48, bam. Sorry, I'm saying great.
Right.
I think as people get older and you know, in general, like, as time goes on and habits are more and more entrenched, you're right. It's much tougher for them to you know, form out of it. And the hope behind movement is that, you know, while, yes, we definitely want adults engaging with our pieces, we definitely want them reading kind of the plights of what's going on in high schools and colleges, and just better understanding the landscape, better understanding, you know, misogyny, better understanding rape culture, gender inequities, sexuality inequities as well.
Mm.
It's tailored to students because of the fact that, you know, it is a process. Change is always a process. Mm-hmm. And people are coming from different avenues, and we want to make sure that when people are forming who they are, that they are doing so very mindfully and understanding of kind of how their actions and how their words especially have important value. It's not, the idea is not like, I know this happened during the presidency was one thing that I think Trump always said was like, you know, I'm not politically correct and people don't like that. And yet there's this idea that being mindful about the way you speak is somehow wrong. That it's like, it's somehow wrong is not the word, sorry, but being mindful about how you speak makes it ingenuine might be the right way to phrase it.
Okay.
So it's like the whole Southern bless your heart thing. You know that they're behind that bless your heart is something.
Well, I mean, Southern bless your heart, if that comes from somebody who, like Mike Pence, who doesn't believe, you know, people should be gay, you know.
Even though he's gay.
I mean, probably.
Oh, no, dude. I have a really great gaydar, and I can tell when people are fucking gay.
Right, now that is something.
It's true.
That is problematic in its own way.
I'm gay. Obviously, I'm joking when I say fucking gaydar. But, like, when I was a kid, there was a kid down the street named Terry who was my best friend on the street. At 8 years old, I knew he was going to turn out to be gay. They moved out. They moved out of the. You know, they moved out.
You mean at 8 years old, you knew he was gay.
He was gay.
Hadn't come out as gay yet.
Right, and I knew.
Sure.
You know, and they moved away. Didn't you lost contact? Whatever. Looked him up on MySpace when that was a thing.
Oh God.
Sure as shit, I was dead fucking right on.
Yeah, so this is an ingrained thing that you've had since 8 years old. You can sniff it out.
Sniff it, and what you say, sniff it out, makes it sound like me. Makes me sound like a Nazi fucking hound.
That's why I'm saying it that way.
I don't do anything when I get there. I just know that I like to be right.
Yeah.
If you listen to this show, you know that I like to be right.
There it is.
And I'm right a
and
lot.
That's why not many people listen to the show. you just solved your own problem.
How many people read your fucking magazine?
What do we have? Issue 2, 2000?
2000?
I think it was about 2000 for issue 2.
All right. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Not bad. No, it is. I mean, but the thing is,
I think he added a zero.
You're right. It was. It's 220. It's 20. That's not.
No, 200. I wouldn't believe. I'm just kidding.
You're like, I don't even believe that. You're like, I don't even believe that.
All right. So what?
Sure, let's speed this fuck up.
We're good.
I gotta read it. I gotta read his magazine.
It's gonna take you longer than we have.
What are you saying? I can't read.
I'm saying you can't read as fast as me. No, I'm right. No, I think going back to what you're saying about political correctness, I think political correctness has such a stigma attached to it. Not that it's ingenuine, in that it's a tool of the left to kind of to stop you from saying what you want to say.
Sure.
And that's the because it baffles me too. Because I see so many people latching on to absolute trash under the auspice of I am against political correctness.
Yeah.
However, this stuff that you're enjoying because you're against political correctness is absolute garbage, regardless of the language that is used.
Sure.
It's just it's very difficult to be creative and to, you know, actually do things correctly when you have when that's your only goal is to not be politically correct.
But I mean, when it comes to like the far left with the people who really scream the political correctness thing, because I'm all about, you know, like we said, better, healthier speech or better speech, whatever.
Mindful speech.
What do you mean by screams political correctness?
Like people who are just like that's the hill that they choose to fucking die on.
The one, so it's that's their only hill.
Basically, like the types that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Like those type of people are like, oh, you can't say this, you can't say this, you can't say this. You can, like those type of people, like that kind of shit irritates me. And it's like they want every. It's like, okay, so do you want every comic to be a clean comic? Do you want everybody to tell jokes like Jerry Seinfeld? Like, is that?
See, well, that's important, right? Because that's actually something that that's an important kind of question that you brought up because. You know, one of the questions that we want, we're kind of trying to explore in issue 4, because issue 3 is coming out tomorrow, so it's spoiler alert, we don't have a piece on this, but one thing we're really kind of looking at issue 4.
When people hear this, it will be out.
Issue 3 will be out, yes. Yes.
Like, because this comes out in 2 days from now.
Okay, so issue 3 is coming out May 27th, but is kind of the role of humor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear people make gay jokes. People make jokes against transgenders, against women. You hear a lot of stereotyping in humor. Mm-hmm. And I think the point you bring up is one that needs to be talked about, that needs to be considered, is, you know, what is humor's role and what is a line, what is okay and what's not okay? And I think it's going to vary who you talk to, but it's still important to consider that. Because you're right. I think in terms of understanding comedy, there... Unless you're Ellen, like you're gonna, or like you said, Jerry Seinfeld, unless you're like Ellen or Jerry Seinfeld, you're gonna make jokes at the expense of somebody else.
Mm.
The question is, you know, who are you? I think is really important in terms of like who's the person making the joke.
I disagree with that to an extent, only because I think what it really comes down to is the intent of the joke. Because you know, a guy like me, a white dude who says something that is gonna push the boundary a little bit. I'm gonna receive blowback from that, which is fine. I mean, as performers, we're supposed to receive blowback from stuff. But I don't know if you're a Dave Chappelle fan, but
exactly what he's gonna bring up.
His fourth special that he just did on Netflix, like the last one.
The one where he jewels like the whole time.
What's that?
He like jewels the whole time. Is that the one.
The one where he's at that small little comedy club and he's sitting on the stool. Smoking cigarettes.
It's
an e-cig,
right?
No, he smokes cigarettes on stage. He's allowed.
You're talking about the special where he makes the transgender.
That's the
joke,
one. That's
where
the one
he's
I
like,
was
let's trick
about.
Him into sex.
That's the one I was talking about, right?
Well, he says in the fourth one, he said now is, you know, and he, you know, Dave Chappelle's, I mean, he's a fucking legend. He has probably the greatest living comedian. And he says in there, he's like, look, comedians, because obviously there was comedians in the office, there was in the audience, there was comedians in the back. He was like, it is now our time. Because they want to take, I mean, Trump wants to take, you know, there's two schools of thought as to who's taking away whose free speech. There's the liberal thought that, you know, oh, they just want to be able to say anything and they just want to shut us up. And then there's the other side of that where it's like, oh, I want to say whatever I want to say it, and blah, blah, you know, that fucking type of person.
Yes.
And Dave Chappelle says in that special, he goes, but as comedians, as the people who bring humor in dark times, who bring light to dark times, he goes, it is our job to push the boundaries. It is our job to step over lines. And I don't think that he necessarily meant, say, problematic shit, but it is our job to, you know, people constantly, dude, it's like every time you watch a comedy special now, it's like there's always a joke in there where people go, oh, and it's like, that has become a thing with the last 3 or 4 years, I bet. Like,
it's been longer than that, but that's, it's not really seen on, it wasn't seen on television.
Right. And, you know, because people would cut those jokes out and shit. But, mm-hmm. like, it's just, it's weird now, like, every time I watch, I mean, even Michael Che. Do you know Michael Che?
Yeah, from Saturday Night Live.
Like, his stand-up special, yeah. He does it, like, a few times. People are like, oh, and he's like, I can say whatever the fuck I want to. He's like, you guys paid to get in here, you paid to see me, you know who I am. Like, and I agree with that. I feel that comedians, like I said, I'm not saying that you have to go out of your way to be a fucking asshole, but you are supposed to push the boundaries. Because if you're backing off of that, then we're not doing our job correctly.
Well, there's boundary pushing, and then there's boundary pushing just for the sake of boundary pushing.
Correct, yeah. Which I disagree with.
That's the problem that I have, is that, you know, people are making, let's call them problematic jokes, because I don't want to pigeonhole them into one type of joke or another.
Sure.
Problematic pigeonhole, that's your next record.
Problematic pigeonhole.
Well, I just want to say, you guys are stuck on a Saturday morning with an 18-year-old in your uncle's house, is that right?
Yeah.
Recording this, you're not doing your job right. So I just want you guys to know, I love you to death and we're best friends now, but just a heads up. Sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right about that. No, it's...
I'm just being an asshole.
we know, that's what this platform is for.
There you go.
The problem isn't necessary, because he can't have, like, the black sword of death hacking down every usage of a word, every premise, you know, every instance of a premise, so to speak, because there are people that are talented enough to craft something wonderful out of that, from a perspective that you've never even considered. But there are people that are pushing those boundaries just for the sake of pushing those Sure. boundaries, and that's where I'm having the problem.
Sure.
Because it's like, why are you wanting to hurt people for no fucking reason other than that's what you do?
Sure. I completely agree. I mean, I think anything without thought is careless and reckless, and therefore is, I mean, whether it's, you know, in humor and in comedy, whether it's, you know, in journalism, whatever mm-hmm. it might be in, it's incorrect. And I think people need to think about it. I think the thing is, pushing the boundaries is important.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to have discussions about these issues, right? About where right. the lines are. But it's also important for comedians, I think, and everyone when they're speaking, to be careful about what they're saying, what that implies about people, what that implies to people, and what that says about people as well.
And a lot of the times, though, you don't know what exactly you're saying when you do a joke until you do the joke.
I mean, but however... I disagree to some degree with you, because I do think you know where you're writing from. Like, if I say...
It, you know where you're writing from, but it matters more how people are going to take it.
For example, it matters.
It does matter more, well, because I mean, your job is to make people laugh. Your job is not...
No, exactly.
But you not speaking is going to make enough people laugh, don't you worry.
But what I'm thinking about, though, is like... For example, and this is a word I don't really fucking use, it's like tranny. If I used tranny in a joke, but not in a sense that I was like, ew, gross, like if the implication, if where I'm coming from and writing from is not to, it's the audience's job, I guess, to interpret it the way that they're going to interpret it.
And yeah, but you might find when you do that joke that they're going to take it away that you didn't intend.
And it's important that you understand what, like, the implication behind that word, how it's used derogatorily, right? For example,
no, I get it.
If you made a joke and you said the N-word, but you meant it not detrimentally, you can't, like, that's impossible to do because that word itself was created.
I don't use that.
No, word. I know. I'm not saying you do. I'm not saying you do. Like, I totally understand that. But I'm saying in general, or like the other F word, you know what I mean?
Right.
That we've been talking about.
Flower.
That's, you got it. You freaking got it. No, but I mean, when using...
Don't say that F word.
Yeah. when using... when speaking, it's important to understand, like, where that word comes from. You know what I mean? And how systemically it's been used as not only an insult, but also a very derogatory term to refer to an incredibly marginalized group of people.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think that's really important when considering what we talk about, right? Privilege is important. I think that's something that people take offense to, and I don't really understand why. People really get mad. It's like, you know, to call a white male privileged... Some people you watch it happen, they get really offended to that. And it's not saying that their accomplishments are undervalued, but it's saying that from the position of just where they're at, they've been given a lot more opportunity and their voice carries a lot more weight usually.
I have a theory about that. The word privilege itself is problematic because the history of that word is that you're born into, you know, wealth, not necessarily any other advantages. It's just used to refer to wealth. So you apply that word to this concept and try to sell it to poor people, they give zero fucks because we're using the wrong word.
Okay.
I do believe, you know, white privilege is a thing. I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, but it's not saying there aren't other factors of privilege, right? Like socioeconomic status. I mean, in general, there's a lot of other aspects of privilege that do exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to understand whenever people are talking about it or even listening to understand where they come from in that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're, you know, a very conservative, rich, white male, understanding that you haven't really interacted with people who have been affected by these issues, whatever they're talking about. Whether, you know, you're talking to a member of the LGBTQ+ community, whether you're talking to, you know, a woman who's talking about, you know, gender discrepancies in the workforce, whether you're talking to a poor person about, you know, the issues that they're facing in general. I mean, it's important to understand that for those people to understand that while they might be rich and wealthy, that doesn't mean they understand the plights of others. And it's incredibly important for people to step back and listen. Because I think what we have right now is, in general, is a system of, like, clashing heads. You know, you talk about, like, liberal versus conservative, Democrat versus Republican. It's this idea that, like, you know, it's two fronts that are just coming together and crashing together. There's not really a sense of discussion when you have our president delegitimizing media sources. And then you have, you know, people poking fun of that, incredibly so, and it's this dynamic that what we try to do is say, you know, it's not a partisan issue. Like, for us, it's not a partisan issue. It's just people are being affected, people are being hurt, and people are having to live with the results of that for their entire life. And
I think it's important to point out before we go what exactly the nature of that hurt is, because I think that's where there is some disconnect.
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's very, very difficult to use the word that you use, pigeonhole kind of the effects of the system, the systemic problems that we have in place on individuals. I mean, what happens to one person can affect somebody entirely different than what happens to somebody else. But the reality is that people are being harassed, sexually harassed. You know, walking down the street, you can observing, you see women being catcalled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for a male, even myself being, you know, 5'10 or for a 6 foot male to say, oh, you know, what's the big deal? People are being complimented. You're also talking to individuals. These women that are being catcalled or being harassed or called after are usually not that big. They're not that strong. They can't defend themselves in that regard. And you have not only people being sexually harassed, you have people being sexually assaulted. And I mean, the reason I'm stuttering, the reason I'm not giving much concrete detail about how people, like what that hurt is because I personally have been very lucky in the fact that I have not been personally affected.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no right or no place to say that this is what happens. This is how people react to it, or even this is how I react to it, because I've never been in that position. But with going on movement and reading kind of some of the pieces there, I mean, the after effects of being sexually assaulted carry throughout some people's lives.
Yes.
And it affects them mentally, it affects them emotionally, it affects them with, you know, the subsequent relationships that they can have. And
sometimes they'll let their teeth rot out of their face so that no one will ever touch them again.
That's what he did.
Oh.
That's what you did. Okay. But I mean, you know, in general,
also meth.
That's something else too, I guess. But I mean, in general, it's tough to say, you know, what that hurt is. I mean, the reality is people are afraid to come out as being either gay, bisexual, pansexual, transgender. I mean, they're afraid to do so because they don't know how they're going to be treated.
Right.
And that's a system that you don't want to live in when, or not that that's not really, really dark, but that's a system that needs to be fixed when you have people that are in high school, you have people that are younger than 18, 14, 15-year-olds, who are afraid to come out as gay, afraid to be themselves. That's literally what it is. They're afraid to be themselves because they don't know how others are going to treat them. And the reality is a lot of those people are mistreated because others are very, very ignorant. And they don't understand why their actions cause something.
People react to what they don't understand.
Exactly.
And that's certainly that's not me like defending that. I
no,
think that's fucking 100% wrong. I mean, I'm curious to see, though, like, as our generation gets... How old are you?
18.
18.
You're fucking 18?
Yeah.
He's fucking with me, right?
No.
No.
Jesus Christ. I commend you. I thought you were, like, my age. and that's a good... I mean that as a compliment. Like, you're so fucking well-spoken.
Thank you.
And
appreciate that.
No, I mean, like, I'm dead serious. Like,
no, I appreciate that.
You come off as very, very, like... Well, you're well beyond your years, let me fucking tell you that. Because I didn't learn a lot of this shit until fucking 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
People my age, I'm curious to see as your generation gets a little bit older and starts to have kids and, you know, kids your age now. I like seeing, like, where the tide is changing. You know, people are speaking out more. And I really, really, really respect that. And I'm curious to see as the population grows from your age group, like that's when things are really going to change. I think because a lot of the old's going to die off. Like a lot of the problematic politicians are going to be dead. And I don't think the majority of maybe kids your age, did you just graduate or when did you graduate last year or high school?
I'm still in high school.
You're still in high school?
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. You're graduating.
Well, when I was talking about high school and college, like the whole time, you thought
I was
30?
No, I thought you were talking about college. I thought you were talking about
You just chopped off the word high school.
Yeah, you just totally
no, I said high school and college, so I assumed that like...
No.
Oh, no, I mean, that's fucking... I mean, dude, like, now my perspective is, like, completely changed. Like, holy shit, like, dude, you got your shit together, and fucking good for you.
I think...
That's fantastic.
I'm just a good actor, that's all. My shit's close to falling apart.
He's super problematic, people. It's a great cover. This is a really good cover.
Right, that's what exactly...
I forget where I was going with that, because obviously that just threw me for a loop. But, like, I'm excited, I guess, to see, like... How you guys grow up and shit, it's gonna change more. I think the majority is kind of swinging the other way, don't you?
It seems that way, just in the way people are voting.
Yeah.
It would appear that some of the old beliefs are dying out, but
I think the one thing that people do that we try to recognize, and I entirely recognize that. Even if you're like myself, right? I mean, I try to be incredibly well versed in these issues. I try to always be trying to learn, understand more. Am I going to fuck up? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying in terms of like I'm not gonna like.
You can't fuck up perfect in all sense, the time.
In terms of what I say,
right?
You know,
right,
in terms of what I say, mm-hmm. am I gonna? And the thing is, you know, that comes from a place of just lack of understanding. You know what I mean? And I think the biggest thing when people make mistakes. And some mistakes are inexcusable. You know, sexually harassing somebody, assaulting somebody, that's inexcusable. Like, those mistakes, mm-hmm. you can't just be like, oh, it happened, or that's locker room. Like, that.
Let me ask you a question. I'm curious your thoughts on this. Do you believe people can be rehabilitated from that? Personally, do you believe that?
What do you mean by rehabilitated?
I mean, I think once they assault somebody.
Once they assault somebody, do you think that they can change?
So the person being the actual assaulter.
Yes, the assaulter.
So
what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on that are actually... So first of all, yes. I think in general, rehabilitation is possible.
I didn't believe that until very, very recently.
But what I will say is this. I will say that, you know, the cases of people assaulting other people, sexually assaulting other people, that we hear about is not anywhere close to the reality of how many times it's happening. I think a lot of people don't actually know that their actions are causing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people actually are even aware that they are sexually assaulting somebody else, right. That they have sexually assaulted somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's a huge problem. Like, if people aren't aware about it, that's a big problem. And the reason I say that is because a lot of the piece that we've received... especially with a lot of the survivor stories that we received, you know, they involve situations that I have explicitly heard other students talk about, but in an entirely different light. So, for example, somebody who might be incredibly affected,
mm-hmm.
The other person might be saying, like, I got with her yesterday. You know what I mean? And his friends might be congratulating him about that. I think that, like, a lot of people don't understand that. And reconciling that, as we come to terms with it, and we say this more eloquently than we're about to say, but we say this is that, you know, recognizing that the people reading, the people editing, the people in general, engaging with movement, in general, really anywhere, might have been a proponent of this culture by either... you know, being ignorant, by staying there and just kind of being silent while something else occurs, by being a bystander, a passive bystander. I mean, that's a reality that we have to face.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you ask people, can people be rehabilitated? I think that's the problem is that a lot of the times these things are happening without even acknowledgement that
there's been something that's done wrong.
Exactly.
So
people don't even know.
How are you supposed to rehabilitate somebody when they don't know that they're wrong?
Exactly. And I think... The tough thing and the hope, though, but also the difficult hope that we have is that people, when they're given a space kind of that they can engage with in their own privacy. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a meeting you have to go to where, you know, you have to be surrounded. People, you can read these pieces, you know, on your phone, on your computer, in the privacy of your own home or your dorm room. Is that the people will recognize that their own actions might have affected other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll be the first to recognize that, you know, I have been silent when my friends have called other people gay as if, you know, it is a bad thing. Kind of, you know, being like, oh, it's totally gay. You know, I'd be the first to recognize that at a point of shame, but that, you know, the first time I saw a group of lesbians, a lesbian couple at my school kissing.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't like the lesbian porn, like, you know, totally overdone kind of aspect, but like a genuine just lesbian couple kissing, my first reaction was, oh my god, that's gross.
Really?
That was my first reaction.
Yeah.
But that's because I was so ignorant to it. And then but immediately after that, I thought about it. I was like, why was I grossed out by that?
Yeah.
You know? And it was that because I hadn't been exposed to it.
Right.
And I'd been showed and kind of, you know, being part of the Indian community, you don't really talk about these issues. At all.
Okay.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like you're going to study and you're going to study and you're going to study. And then, you know, at like 22, you're going to find like the love of your life and you marry them. And like, that's going to be it. Right. There's a stark difference between talking about the reality of how people work on these issues and people, you know, engage with each other, mm-hmm. and versus, you know, what people expect to happen, especially being part of the Indian community. I just hadn't engaged. I hadn't realized that before. And that was a source of shame to me. A shame that I remember, because it's important to remember, that I was very ignorant about these issues. And I think a lot of people are ignorant. And I repeat that because it's important that people take it upon themselves to engage with the pieces, engage with, you know, I'm not saying we're the only outlet. You know, there's many outlets, Rain, Haven. It's important that people engage and read and try to learn and listen, because that's the only way that they're going to be able to better themselves and that they're going to be able to then hopefully stop other things from happening in the future.
Right.
The majority of people that are sexually assaulted aren't going to report.
Right.
The majority, or even if they do report, something might not come of it, because in legal terms, it's very, very difficult to prove things sometimes. Proof is incredibly difficult to acquire. And a lot of people, you know, in general, if they do say something, face a whole bunch of trouble in their own right. Like saying I have been sexually assaulted, or even saying, you know, I was sexually assaulted, provides people with a whole bunch of problems.
Yeah.
And that's terrible. I mean, these people, these victims have already been through so much. And so then them trying to come out and say, you know, this happened, you know, not only from like a social perspective, but from an economic perspective, a legal perspective, you know, they're not advanced, like they're not treated the way they should be. The legal system is fucked up.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And I think, you know, in that avenue, it's not about necessarily what is like legally correct. I mean, laws are very, very important. I'm not saying, you know, break the law. Laws are very, very important. It's not necessarily from like a legal perspective of what's right and what's wrong, but understanding that the way we interact with each other is much more nuanced than that.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from a place of understanding is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when people do, they'll be incredibly, incredibly surprised to see how open people are to talk and to engage with them personally, is what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, when they come from a place of understanding. You know, like for example, pronouns. That's a very, very important thing. I have a few friends who are transgender individuals, and I will still sometimes use the wrong pronoun with them.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to...
It's difficult. Now, acknowledge it's difficult. You know, it's not... I mean, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't try.
Right.
Because it's very, very important. It's their identity. You know, I wouldn't call them by a different name.
Mm-hmm.
But rather that, you know, because I've explicitly said, you know, I'm sorry if I say, you know, he instead of she, but please do correct me. Please let me know. I find that the response is not... You're getting yelled at, how dare you screw up? But it's hey, you know, you used he. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. And then you think about it. And that happens less and less and less.
Yeah.
Because if we come from a place of understanding and trying to really, like, you'll never be able to fully understand.
Right.
I'll never be able to fully understand what it's like to be a transgender human being or to be a gay individual, and knock on wood, I hope we want to understand what it's like to be sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
And I don't right now, because I've never been directly affected. But when you come from a place of trying to understand,
yeah,
you end up reaching a common goal that's a lot more beneficial, instead of like two different spectrums kind of running into each other full tilt. And I think that's the goal. That's why movement's not partisan. It's not like, oh, this is a Democratic platform.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Democratic isn't like political party.
Right.
Like Democratic isn't like, you know,
who votes. Yeah.
Or you know, it's a Republican platform, but it's just, we're hoping to solve it, saying that there's a lot of ignorance and there's also a lot of knowledge. And bringing them together is going to be really, really important in an engaging way, too.
Yeah.
And something that people can actually read. Because no one picks up a newspaper anymore and, like, sits down and says, oh, let me get a cup of coffee, you know?
Yeah.
You're running to, I don't know, Starbucks to get a venti, triple frap latte, two pumps soy milk, double espresso, tilted or whatever. Shit, I don't know. I don't go to Starbucks, but... or maybe I do. Maybe
me.
That is... Maybe, no, that is my Starbucks order, y'all. But, I mean, that's incredibly important, I think. In general, yeah.
So, since we can't walk into a Starbucks and go to a handy movement kiosk, where can we find you online?
So, you know, we're on movement. We're at movementmag.com. So that's MVMENT and then mag.com. You can find us on social media. So we have Instagram and Facebook, which is all at Movement Mag. So MVMENT and then MAG. And we just started a Twitter. Seriously, follow us. But we have like one follower. Like literally just started, I mean like 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
it's really recent. And so, you know, yeah, you know, you'll be able to find our issues there. You'll be able to find our pieces there. I do want to express how incredibly grateful we are to everybody who has submitted. You know, often they do include contact information. You're able to kind of, you know, work with them on their piece. But for those that don't and are telling their story through an anonymous platform, like it's incredibly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And we are incredibly grateful that people trust us with their voice. And that is something that we do not
take lightly.
We do not take lightly. I was gonna say we take seriously, but I don't want to say we do not take seriously. I was about to put them together, but no, it's something we do not take lightly, and we incredibly care about. We have a lot of phenomenal people working on movement as well. You know, everybody working on it is, no one's getting paid.
Right.
We're all students that are developing it, high school and college students that are developing it, coding it, running it, designing it.
Did you say the website was again?
MVMENT.
MVMENT, okay.
MAG.com.
Yeah.
MVMENT is a watch brand, so we thought we'd stray away from
that. Yeah,
okay. Because, you know, they do watches. But, you know, I think personally, to be able to work alongside such talented and incredible people is a blessing. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, I hope that we continue to expand and grow. We're doing more expansion to college communities. We're always looking for submissions. And okay. really a lot of information you can find on our website, as well as contact information. So there's a contact us page. Please reach out if any questions are there. Even just wondering how you can get involved, how you can reach your community better. That's where we're at right now.
All right. Well, Vinny, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Jordan, I don't think we're going to find... You know what? We can't really do it this time.
Wait. Well, you know what? I actually have an update from Greg Iron's episode. Should we read it?
No. Well, let's not. Let's do that. Sweat? Patreon. What's yeah. That? Let's do bread sweat. Sweat. Let's do bread. Why do you hate bread sweat?
Why do I hate bread sweat? Okay, so here's the thing. You ever put... First of all, what is bread sweat? Bread sweat is where you take bread, you put it in a toaster, and then you put it on a plate for a little bit, and it gets kind of damp at the bottom.
Oh. Soggy bottom.
Soggy bottom. But it's toasted, too. That's the thing I don't like. First of all, I don't understand how that happens. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand how bread sweat exists as a thing.
Well, that's called science. Maybe you'll learn that in science class.
Exactly. You're right. Who knows? Science, not my thing, apparently. But I hate it because, like, when you take bread out of a toast, you want it to be crispy, mm-hmm. crunchy. PB&J is great with, like, lightly toasted bread.
Yes.
And then you have that little bit of, like, dampness there that kind of gets on your lip, and you can... You can kind of taste it, and it's gross. Frankly, it's gross. Mm-hmm. I don't know what there's to like about bread sweat. You know, and I don't know how to really like...
I just love that it's called bread sweat.
I love that it's called bread sweat, too, frankly.
But does it only happen with toast, or is it when you leave out a regular piece of bread for too long, do you get a little bit of sweat on the bottom there?
You know what? That's a great question. I would not... I don't... tend to just leave bread outside and experiment. And remember,
you don't
I'm
test
not
bread a whole lot.
I don't. That's, I mean, you know, that's something I've been meaning to make time for. And hopefully
that'll be your senior year science.
That's bro. Exactly what it is. Yeah.
Just gonna leave a box of bread outside.
How much bread sweat develops on each individual type of bread?
And then by the end of the year, have like a little bit of it to collect it up.
Here's the mold.
Here's the mold. It's been out for a year and a half now.
Oh, that's fun.
But no, I mean, I think the funniest thing is I messaged you guys about this. And so coming in, I actually had no idea what I was talking about, whether I was talking about bread sweat or movement stuff. And both conversations would like been drastically different. So I sat down, we started talking. I was like, do I mean doing bread sweat? Am I doing movement? Do I mean do both?
Well,
bread sweat, y'all.
That's
get
bread
sweat. Get a little rack.
You just get a rack.
Try
and
it
that-
out. I don't know. I have no idea.
You know what? I'm going to try it.
Hang it on a clothesline? Or...
I mean, I've got bread.
Yeah.
All right. Let's make We're this doing science later.
That's your third podcast.
Science.
Yeah, that's our. That'll be our third podcast, science.
Or one of your episodes.
Jeremy and Jordan do science.
I would listen to that.
All right.
I would listen to that.
Honestly, we should make that a YouTube show is what we should do.
Right.
Oh, also, I have a suggestion for you guys.
Yeah.
There's somebody who works on movement. Her name is Margot, and she came up with this suggestion because I said this is the name of the podcast that I'm working on. She said you guys should call it "Shit That Makes Me Angry." Because like, let the anger flow through you is okay, but I thought "Shit
That
Makes Me."
That's not even what our podcast is called.
What is it called?
Let the hate flow through you. Also, it's a Star Wars quote, and we're never changing.
We're never.
Is it a Star Wars quote?
Yes. Yeah. So, Margo, thank you for your suggestion.
Dang,
it's never getting. Changed.
I just lost points with everybody just now. I just lost points. Maybe we'll just edit that part. No, we won't.
No, we're gonna leave it there.
We're
so, Jordan,
you understand?
I don't think anybody is gonna hate Fred Sweat as much as Vinny Karup.
No, there is another.
I won't apologize again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about me.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.